He says, if you don't laugh, it's not funny. So hopefully we'll laugh. And that's part of the happiness. That's the expression of the heart when we're free of our usual preoccupations. One of the expressions of the heart. And really what we will be pointing to over the course of the weekend is what is intrinsic to your nature, not something that you have to create. We don't have to create happiness. We simply have to remove or put aside our usual obscurations, our usual patterns and habits that limit our experience of our natural happiness. And you could say that about calm. You know, there'll be language about calming the mind and calming the body, but you'll find that the body and mind are inherently calm when your mind is in the same location as your body, and when you come out of the tangle of your usual preoccupations, you'll see that the experience of being aware, you might even check it out right now, the experience of being aware, knowing that you're aware, is calm. Awareness is always quiet, always non-contentious. And of course, the more you get used to being aware, the more calm you'll be. So all this is just a little bit of a pointer to the reminder that this is really recovery mode rather than creation mode. We're not in the construction business. We're in the deconstruction of our the habits that wreck our life, and the way we replace our what we call akusala or unwholesome mental habits, we replace them with wholesome ones that are really just qualities that are natural to us. It's natural to be aware, is it not? If I asked you to stop being aware, what happens? And it's just that we are aware naturally, but we're not often aware with that quality of sati sampajanya, mindfulness with clear comprehension, aware that we're aware. And once you do and you start exploring what it feels like, what the experience of being aware is, it's these moments when there is awareness, and I'll just review this as we go along the retreat, but you'll notice that when you are aware, it's as though our problem solving seems to diminish. And when our problem solving seems to diminish, there is peace. There is the sense of our desires being fulfilled. Isn't it true that the deepest desire we have is for peace? What we hope for at the end of the rainbow? When I've accomplished everything, when I've gotten rid of everything I don't want, I want to be able to go, ah. And the unfortunate habit is that we postpone that sense of ah by associating our happiness with getting things done, solving a problem, becoming, waiting, hoping, expecting, all the while the end of that rainbow is those moments when we are exactly where we are, doing what we're doing, free of hope and expectation. And there's peace. So I say that now because a lot of our practice, we could call it training, we can call it cultivation, but we can also call it getting used to, familiarizing ourselves with what's always already here. And for you to experience that through your unique individuality. So the teachings never deny our individuality. But we see that individuality is made up of all of these each of our individual experiences made up of lots of non-personal elements. You know, our body, for example, earth, air, fire, water. Our mind, everything that's ever happened to us. But yet we do have a particularity as an individual, have a flavor, have a howiness. And you have Josephine-ness and a Kathy-ness. So we're not going to create a new person or get rid of the person that you are, the individual, but we will see that, we will increasingly see that the individual is not this, not on in real time. And I think this is what the Buddha recognizes, the individual is not a problem to be solved. And that's often the way we think of ourselves, isn't it true? We don't find that on present evidence. We only find that if we consult our memory and our plans. Real time, we find peace. So something of the Buddha's way to happiness is, as the great Zen monk poet Ryokan says, Buddha is your mind, and the way goes nowhere. Don't look for anything but this. If you point your cart north when you want to go south, how will you ever arrive? So one of the fruits of stopping this maniacal, obsessive lurch toward the imagined future, which our mind tends to be a lot preoccupied with. Any of you familiar with the planning mind? Any of you wait for the, you're probably already waiting for the end of the retreat. Any of you wait for the weekend, wait for the vacation, wait for the, we tend to wait a lot, or we tend to plan a lot. I forgot where I was, but something about the maniacal obsession with what's next. You're right, the Buddha's way to happiness goes nowhere. Don't look for anything but this. But to settle in, to come out of the tangle of our trance of becoming, the Buddha called bhava, there is a recovery of our humanity. You know, of course, it has that particularity of each individual, but it also has some common themes. And we are, when we are present, and we are settling in and relaxing, we are very tender, very vulnerable. And part of that is good news, because we see that it allows us to be sensitive to our impact on each other, the impact on the people who have to live with us every day, and the impact of what other people, everyone is very permeable. And so it is really essential in this process of reawakening to our natural peace and ease that we create a condition here of great safety, of great an ability to really completely let go here, and feel like we don't have to guard our ourselves. All we have to do is guard our senses, just like be aware. But for that to create a condition where we can really just let go of our usual defenses and usual identities and usual views of ourselves. We agree to be together in a way that honors our sensitivity, and we commit to being harmless in our thoughts. They're actually permeable too. Our words and our actions. Of course, the word part we agree to. As Kat, I forgot who did the precepts, or who alluded to them. We agree to be together in what's called noble silence. We give each other the gift of solitude, so that you don't have to engage on the usual dimension of personality and identity. And that's why also people who came, many of you are old Dharma friends. Shame, no. It's okay. It's comic relief. Anyway, many of us are old Dharma friends, or you may have partners here, or siblings, or any number of different arrangements. But what we try to do is step out of all of those different roles and almost treat the people that we have relationship with, treat them here like you don't know them. Give them the gift of being able to just be a field of aware presence, the presence of awareness, an embodied awareness, just knowing what's happening at the different doors of perception, different senses, the eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, body, and mind. And not to have to elaborate or experience things through the filter of our different relationships. And for that, we commit to noble silence. And this is really one of the most, these training guidelines that we engage in so that we can relax. This is one of the most generous parts of our practice, and the ground of the whole Buddha Dharma and the path of awakening is generosity. It's the generosity of harmlessness, the generosity of giving each other the gift of safety, and in this case, solitude. So is everybody agreeable to keeping noble silence? I want you to look around and say, I'm going to honor your solitude. Great. And we will also, I don't think it's so difficult, but we will also, on this, with this group, for some reason, there seems to be a level of purity or sincerity of interest in what we're doing, but we'll also refrain from any flirting, intentional or extended sexual fantasizing, any kind of engagement with anyone on that kind of sensual level where you're trying to get someone's attention, really giving each other the gift of physical safety from any kind of intrusion that's not asked for, especially when we're committing to solitude here. So traditionally, of course, this is not causing any harm with our sexuality or in the case of a retreat, celibacy, but it's also in our mind, it's also in just little gestures of showing up in the same location of somebody that you find interesting. We give that up. We turn that attention, we turn that sensual energy, of course, that made all of us, and instead we pay attention to it if it arises. We use it as a recovery of our vital recovery of the living present, which is vital and so different from past and future, which are mental. All that fantasy is just it's in a dead zone in a way. Future that's unborn, past that's gone. It's the only reality is where we're sitting. So we deprive ourselves of the vitality of the present when we spend a lot of time lost in fantasy. And so we just commit to not extending it when it arises and not engaging anyone in real time of in anything that invades our safety. Everybody agreeable to that? Okay. Please look around and nod. Thank you. We also agree to fulfill our desire for, and really at the heart of Buddha Dharma is open-heartedness and clarity of mind, you know, to be able to see clearly, to see without all the confusion of our restless, agitated, aversive, wanting, dull minds. We commit to clarity, and so we don't want to engage in anything that clouds our perception, that leads to unwise action, that leads to confusion, that leads to dullness. And so we refrain from taking any intoxicants, drugs or alcohol. But also, if you have prescribed drugs, you keep taking them over the course of the retreat. Don't use it as a time to fast from the drugs that may keep you stable in some way. But we agree to refrain from recreational drugs and alcohol and the number one new recreational drug, which is our smartphone. The hypnotic and trance useful tool for our life, amazing tool for our life, but also a source of real addiction. So we refrain from that for the time of the retreat, at least while you're here together. And everybody agreeable to that? Okay. And everyone agreeable to not causing each other any harm? Not killing each other? And respecting each other's property? And along with that, practicing simplicity and contentment with what you have, and just working with whatever shows up. Okay, thank you for all engaging in the commitment to create a safe atmosphere for us to practice. Then the second part of our, that's really a more casual way of sharing the ritual of taking the training guidelines of the training precepts of not killing, not stealing, not engaging in sexuality, intoxicants, and speech. Second ritual that seems essential, even though I alluded to it as we started the day, that we are, instead of relying on our usual distractedness and our usual planning and remembering and shopping and eating and all the things that tend to momentarily satisfy our restless minds, we choose in this context to, instead of going to the refrigerator for refuge or to the mall for refuge, we go to the Buddha for refuge. And in the most immediate sense, we all know what the historical Buddha is, an inspiration and for example of a human being who, like us, had existential angst and wanted to be happy and found this interior happiness. But the most immediate sense, the Buddha, because Buddha means awake, it's that wakefulness that lives in us, that we go to the fact that we are aware intrinsically. We go to that rather than something else. And don't look any further. And an awake person in any moment knows, if you're aware, you know the Dharma. The Dharma means what's happening, truth, the way things are. Not how I hope they'll be, how they were last week or next week, but what's actually happening. So in the most immediate sense, whatever you're experiencing is the Dharma. And so as my mother says here, that may be useful here, no woulda, coulda, shouldas. Instead of what's happening. And these first two, Buddha and Dharma, are very accessible in that at any point in the retreat that you feel lost, confused, whatever, if you simply ask yourself the question, is there awareness right now? Of course, if you ask that question, there is. But am I aware? And then if you ask yourself the second question, what am I aware of? You've already arrived at the, as one Tibetan teacher says, you've already arrived at the superior place. There's no higher mountain to climb than awareness of what you're experiencing right now. So I go to the Buddha for refuge, I go to the Dharma for refuge, and then last but not least, Dharma of course mean in the historical sense the teachings of the Buddha that do provide a template for us to and a reminder of where to place our attention and to, as inspiration, as a support for our being aware in this life and having it have a direction that is wholesome and helpful. So we can also draw inspiration from the teachings. But again, that immediate, the teachings are really fulfilled by knowing what's happening through one of your different doors of perception right now. He must need to have his phone on for something. I'm so mad. No, I'm just kidding. Not really. You know, some people need to have their phone. They may be on call at a hospital. You know, there may be somebody in the hospital. So if you do have to have your phone on, then at least have the alerts to vibrate instead of a sound if you can. Anyway, last but not least, traditionally we go to the Sangha for refuge. And in a sense, that's drawing inspiration from the from what's called the Arya Sangha, the Sangha of Awakening, that the kind of mystical stream of heart-to-heart, mind-to-mind teachings that have come to us. And we wouldn't be here without that, the benefits of the Arya Sangha. And we can draw real support from all those who've come before us, who practiced, realized the fruits of the teachings, and then devoted their lives to sharing heart to heart, mind to mind with others. And there's something special about remembering that we don't exist here apart from all those that came before us. And there's something very nourishing about that reflection. But again, in the most immediate sense, the Sangha is our group together practicing over this weekend and feeling the lifting power, the energetic power of practicing together. I even brought my little list that I sometimes share, the similarity of practicing together in this kind of Sangha community with the lessons that we've learned from geese. As each goose flaps its wings, it creates an uplift for the birds that follow. By flying in a V formation, the whole flock adds 72% greater flying range than if each bird flew alone. People who share a common direction, sense of community, can get where they're going quicker and easier because they're traveling on the thrust of one another. When a goose falls out of formation, it suddenly feels the drag and resistance of flying alone. it quickly moves back into formation to take advantage of the lifting power of the bird immediately in front. If we had the sense as much sense as a goose to stay in formation with those headed where we want to go, we are willing to accept their help and give our help. And this is really a key here, that not only do we draw support from practicing together, but it is also a great act of generosity to dedicate our practice to supporting others, and that gives its own kind of lifting power. Really, dana is the ground for all of this. It's a kind of love, the love that of each other, that where we want to. It's the most generous thing to become self-aware. Then other people don't have to be tracking you all the time and fending off your unwise actions of body, speech, and mind. So it's really generous to practice, really generous to support other people's practice. So we go to the Buddha for refuge, we go to the Dharma for refuge, we go to the Sangha for refuge. I think I'll read these another time, the rest of the lessons from Geese. But I think you get the point. As far as the refuges go, as a way of connecting with the history of people practicing like this, remembering that we're not just engaged in some kind of new age workshop. This is a kind of tried and true lineage of practice, and that there is a sacred power in connecting with that. I thought we would chant the refuges. We'll forego chanting the precepts so that we can start practicing. I'll do a brief introduction, then we'll do the homage to the Buddha and the Buddha Dharma Sangha, and we'll go to refuge three times. And then brief introduction by myself, and then we'll do it the rest call and response. Han tamayan Buddha ratana satinayan jakaro mase namo tassa. Your turn. Namo tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa. Namo tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa. Namo tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhassa. Buddham saranam gacchami. Dhammam saranam gacchami. Sangham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi. Buddham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi. Dhammam saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi. Sangham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi. Buddham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi. Dhammam saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi. Sangham saranam gacchami. Thank you so much for engaging in the rituals and setting our ship a sail to the far shore.